Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Interstate Batteries offers a wide variety of batteries for your everyday needs. Stop into one of their thousands of retail locations and talk with a battery specialist about batteries for your truck, trail cameras, and even those weird batteries for your rangefinder. Interstate Batteries even offers cell phone repair in certain locations. For more information, visit interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
From athletic stuff like a full court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff like a half mile stroll. Get those steps in. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Hunting Gear Podcast, and we've got a good one today. We're talking with Greg Godfrey of Tethered, and today's episode isn't really about Tethered per se, but it's about the saddle hunting market. It's about the evolution of saddle hunting. It's about, a lot of this stuff you guys have already heard, but it's always good to touch base and ask a new line of questioning to the same people. And it's crazy to see how successful a company like Tethered has been in the short amount of time that they've been a business. And I mentioned this in the podcast, and this is something that I'm intrigued by, is the loyal following that they have in that short period of time. And in my opinion, it rivals the loyalty that some of the other bigger brands in the industry have, right? Some of these companies have been around for 30 plus years and have this loyal following. Tethered has, in my opinion, the same loyal following per capita, and it's only really like 5 years old. So that blows my mind. And a lot of things went right for them as far as marketing and social media, but how well their product performs as well has a lot to do with it. So it's a really good conversation. You know, we do talk about the evolution. We talk about where they see the market. Is it still a fad? Is it past fad stage? We talk about what they're planning for in the next 5 years. We talk about their growth. We talk about their new product line, and it's just a really fun conversation about. We even talk about the tree stand market as well, and how, there's some people out there who prefer a tree stand, and there's some people out there that prefer saddles. And so we have that conversation as well. And Greg's just an awesome guy to interview because he actually knows what he's talking about, and that makes for good content, right? So Before we get into today's episode, I'm going to do a real quick commercial break for you guys, and then we'll jump right into to the interview, and Greg's going to blow us away with some knowledge there, so it's pretty cool. If you guys are looking for an awesome apparel line, if you're looking for an awesome lifestyle brand, you need to check out theaverageconservationist.com. Awesome hats, awesome t-shirts, hoodies. Every single day, I'm wearing something from The Average Conservationist. The cool thing about the company is that any product or anything that they sell, 10% of their total annual revenue goes to some form of conservation effort, whether it is a local, a state, or a federal effort. These guys are putting their money where their mouth is. And so in an indirect way, every time you buy a product from The Average Conservationist, you yourself are contributing to a conservation effort. So theaverageconservationist.com. I'm a huge fan of the general hat and the camo hoodie and the Euro mount t-shirt. Those are that's my date night attire, right? I love that stuff. So it's very comfortable too. Discount code for 10% off, NFC10. Hunt stand, I talk about this a lot. It is scouting season, right? It's shed hunting season. So as you are out there looking for sheds, doing your scouting, you need to be journaling and documenting everything you find. Anything from a pinch point to main trails to old rubs and scrapes, to where you find your sheds, to where you see deer. And the more you document on hunt stand, the better chance that you're going to have, like, being able to forecast deer movement and locate these terrain features when it comes time to hunt. Whether you're mobile or whether you're the guy who likes to get out in the summer and cut tree stand shooting lanes and that kind of stuff, definitely check out HuntStand, HuntStand.com. Tons of features, very affordable price at only $30 a year, and it has probably some of the most up-to-date satellite imagery in any mobile app, mobile hunting app that there is. So huntstand.com. And lastly, Novex Outdoors. If you're looking for, discount code for HuntStand, SN20 gets you 20% off. SN20 gets you 20% off. And lastly, Novex Outdoors. If you are looking for a tree stand, a mobile tree stand, a Made in America company, four sticks and their smaller platform, it's going to get you anywhere you need to get into. Crooked trees, straight trees, small trees, big trees. The ability to put yourself not in a close enough position, but the right position. That's a big difference there. Sometimes 5 yards can make a big difference. And a tree stand that can get balanced, it's quiet and easy to set up, it makes you mobile. Right there, Novex Outdoors. Go check them out. There's a couple options to choose from there. And it's Made in America, which is a huge deal to me. So there's the commercials. Let's get into today's, I guess we'll call it the saddle hunting futuristic feedback episode with Greg Godfrey of Tethered. All right, on the phone with me today from Tethered, Greg, what's up, man?
Hey, Dan, just kind of unwinding from a long deer season and getting caught up on honeydew list and all that stuff and show schedules. Yeah. You know, Tethered's kind of going nuts right now with shows. But I'm at home now, and one of the big to-dos before this week is over is to get my boat, or my kayak, actually, ready to go catch some fat girls on the lake. Them big bass are going to start spawning here in a little bit in Georgia. So that's my next item on the list.
Yeah. Are you going to connect with Parker at all? Because that dude loves to fish out of his kayak.
Absolutely. Me and Parker, we've been talking about doing a bass trip like that for years.
Yeah.
Me and another friend of mine did one on Lake Seminole in Alabama. And it was awesome. So I would love to do that again. And Parker'd be a great 3-day fishing mate, I think.
Heck yeah. He loves doing that stuff, man. And I don't know why. I'm that guy who was built to never jump high, to stay close to the ground. And I don't know why God made me this way, but I don't have very good balance, right? So I have to take everything twice as slow as everybody else. And like every time I think about trying to get into a kayak and do what you guys do, I get a little anxiety because I think that's like you guys kayaking up, you know, up into some backwaters and getting out and you know, running and gunning out of a kayak, man, that's crazy stuff.
It's a ton of fun.
Yeah.
It really is. And, you know, believe it or not, kayaks are, they're kind of like tree stands and saddles nowadays. There really is something that will work for anyone, just depending on what your goals are. And there are some kayaks out there that are absolutely beefy. I had one. It's called a Hobie Pro Angler. And, man, it would support you. Like, it thing is solid. You don't feel tippy like you do in a lot of canoes and kayaks. But there's some of these kayaks that are made strong. And you know, for the guy maybe like you that doesn't have the greatest balance in the world, and they're awesome. That's what I used for years, and now I'm using something a little bit smaller. But yeah, it's a blast, and I love it. It's my favorite way to get out on the water.
Yeah, I'm thinking something more along a river barge for me, or one of those army vehicles that basically builds a bridge across water. That's what I think I'd feel comfortable in.
Yeah, that'd be great for access. You know, find those little hidden islands and then just drop your bridge and walk right across.
Yeah. The whole, they'll never know I'm coming at all.
Yeah, exactly.
So how did your season go this year?
Season went okay. I actually didn't hunt at all in my home state of Georgia. I was traveling quite a bit, and where I live in Southeast Georgia near Savannah, it's full of swamps and gators and snakes. And I've been here for 6 years now. The Army moved me here. And to be honest, I don't really enjoy hunting here that much anymore. I've kind of gotten spoiled a little bit by traveling to other states where there's bigger deer and more of them and easier access. And so I'm whining a little bit, but I didn't hunt that much in Georgia, but I did get to hunt a lot of states outside of Georgia. And I had a mixed season. So I tagged one buck, and then I didn't recover another one in Kentucky, which was pretty awful, actually. You know how some animals, I'm sure you've experienced this, and a lot of people listening have experienced this, sometimes you screw up, right? You make a bad shot, you rush it, whatever, you know, you mess up, and you know that it was your fault. This one in Kentucky stung a little bit more because I felt like I did everything right. I was calm at the shot. I was confident at the shot. I felt like I did everything right, and I still didn't recover the deer. And that one stings. That's the first time that's happened to me where I felt like it really wasn't my fault. And I'm still living with that one a little bit, not going to lie.
Yeah, man, there's something to say about that. There, like you said, I've had plenty of these where you rush a shot, or, hey man, I should have waited for him to take one step further, or, you know, his body language said calm and I rushed the shot, whatever. And then there's some where it's like, man, I shoot my bow every time I go out before a hunt. Right. And I've had those crazy things where it's like, all of a sudden maybe I knew it, maybe I didn't know it, maybe I didn't check my gear, but something happened, and I put a shot on a deer. I was calm, I was collective, and the arrow just like pinwheels out of the rest, and I'm just like, what happened? And then I go back after that, and I shoot my bow again, and it just came out. You know, everything was money, everything's on. So you're just like, what happened? And you never do find the answer, and those suck the worst.
They do. And I'll go back just a touch. I didn't do everything right. You just mentioned the animal with his body language, and in hindsight, you know, I filmed this hunt, and I was hunting public land in Kentucky, and in hindsight, looking at the deer, he was incredibly tense, and for whatever reason, that just didn't register with me as something to really, you know, consider. And when I was going to take my shot, he was only at like 17 yards. So it wasn't even a difficult shot. And I guess, you know, in the moment, my brain said, you know, it doesn't really matter that he's tense because he's close. And so that's what happened. You know, looking back, he was very tense and he jumped the string, and, you know, it is what it is. That sucked. But then it's funny how hunting can be such a cruel mistress, because that was the last week of October in Kentucky. I packed up camp right after that, and I had a Kansas tag this year. So I drove over to Kansas, and I shot a nice buck on the ground, which was the very first time that's ever happened to me, and it was at like 8 yards. So it was, I went from an extreme low from that terrible, you know, mess up in Kentucky to 6 days later killing a big buck on the ground and just absolute elation after it. So it's weird, man. It's highs and lows.
Yeah, that's a fact. And the lows suck, but the highs, man, they kind of just overshadow all that stuff.
They make it sweeter. It's like when you're having a terrible day on the golf course, and on the 18th hole you sink a 40-foot putt and you're like, I'm the greatest golfer in the world.
That's funny. But here with me, I know I suck at golf. So what I do is I have zero expectations going into any type of golfing that I do, once every 2 years kind of golf, where my dad actually lives on a golf course, and my brother is a really good golfer, but I went down the path of hunting instead of, you know, golfing. And so I know that when I go golfing, I'm going to lose about a dozen balls. I know that I'm going to get pissed and start drinking. And, you know, like, that's how I golf, but with zero expectations.
Well, that's probably a smarter way to do it, to be honest.
Absolutely. Oh, man. Crazy, crazy year for the hunting market, right? I mean, every company that I've talked to on this show, or that I deal with on a sponsorship level or partnership level, has just told me that 2020, 2021 have both been pretty significant years, and all these brands are up. I guess you could call it the COVID wave or whatever. Did you guys experience that as well?
I don't really know how to answer that, only because we're so new.
Yeah.
So 2019 was our very first year in business.
Yeah.
We launched at the end of the summer in 2018. So, you know, right after 2019, our first year in business, COVID hits. And so I don't really know how much of our growth at Tethered has been because of the COVID wave, like you mentioned, and how much of it was going to happen anyway. There's really no way to know, but I mean, for sure we got a boost. There's just no doubt about it. You can't see the public, you know, the hunting public, as in, like, you know, you and me, not the YouTube series, but you can't see the general public go out and license sales, you know, increase dramatically, and fishing license sales, and, you know, basically everything outdoors increases dramatically in the last 2 years. And for sure that benefited Tethered as well. It's hard to say for me, because like I said, we're brand new.
Yeah. Yeah. You definitely don't have trend lines really to compare on an average year yet.
Exactly.
So yeah. So with that said then, I mean, from where you guys started in 2019 to where we are today, beginning of 2022, just from talking to people, just from social media, just from the vibe out there in the hunting community, in this pocket of mobile public land, run and gun hunters, and even people who hunt private land as well. Tethered is a name, right? It's made it past the, like, this is my opinion. It's made it past the, are these guys going to make it or not? Okay. They've made it. They've put out the products. The products are being sold. People are getting the results that they want from them. And now they are, you know, they're here, right? When you guys started this company, like, what was your 3-year goal or 5-year goal in 2019? And have you hit that expectation yet?
Absolutely. We did. We kind of blew it away. So to kind of circle back to 2018 when we launched, my partner and I, Ernie, this is the God's honest truth. When we launched, we said, you know, maybe inside of 3 years, we could make enough with Tethered to pay for us to go out west and hunt elk. That was seriously the goal.
Yeah.
And I've talked about this many, many times. Yep. Well, it wasn't the goal, but that was maybe the low hanging fruit expectation, I guess, is if we could do that, we'd consider this a win. You know, if we could figure out a way to sell enough gear that we could fund our own addiction in this lightweight mobile hunting crowd and pay for our gear and get our friends in cool gear and then, you know, have enough excess to go hunt elk, that would be a success. Well, we kind of did that in like the first 3 months. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Outside of that, it's just been kind of a wild ride. Like you said, I think I agree with you in that it did feel, I'm going to say, for the first 2 years, like kind of like what you were alluding to. Like, is this just a fad? Did we really happen onto something, or is this just a slightly better mousetrap that's going to lose steam? And now, you know, going into our fourth year, it feels like we really hit a vibe in the hunting community and our gear is helping people. So yeah. I feel like it's pretty cool.
Yeah. And before we started talking, before we started recording there, we had this very short conversation of what I wanted to talk about. Part of what I wanted to talk about anyway. And the last time saddles became popular, I'm guessing somewhere in the 90s, it was a quick, from what I remember, it was quick. It was a fad, right? Like, people were using it, you know, a very small group of people. And then I feel like directly after the saddle started becoming popular again, all these new versions of tree stands came out. Lone Wolf, the original Lone Wolf came out and became better. And then some of the hang-on tree stands became lighter. Some of the climbing methods became lighter to tote around in the woods, thus giving people more of a mobile option. And they kind of went back to the tree stand hunting. Now, with all these years later, coming out of tree stands, in my opinion, you can go to carbon fiber, you can do all these things, but there is a plateau and a price point plateau that, yes, you can make the same thing, you can make it lighter, but it's going to cost you five times as much. Not so much with the saddle, right? So, like, do you think that this is past fad stage and that saddle hunting is a viable option moving forward for anybody who, whether they're new or seasoned hunters, like, to stay mobile?
I think so. I think the saddle is gonna just be that other option. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like you said, like in the 90s, it was, you know, what kind of tree stand? Do you use a climber or do you use a hang on or do you use a ladder stand? And those were kind of the options. And I think now we've gotten to the point where it's, you know, what do you use? Do you use a hang-on, a climber, a lock-on, or a saddle? And I feel like it's finally pushed over that hump into, if you want to call it mainstream, or however you want to describe saddles being used a lot more frequently inside normal hunters. You know, the guy that's not going 5 miles deep on some random piece of public land and, like, working his ass off.
Yeah.
We're getting more and more conversations. I'm having more and more conversations around the country with just normal guys that are hunting grandpa's back 40, just normal guys, right? Weekend warriors. They hunt six times a year and that's all the vacation they get. And, you know, more power to them. They're fine in saddles too. And I think there's a couple reasons for that. Like you mentioned, in the early 90s, there was that fad of tree saddles. There's really only one company that was doing it. And the products definitely weren't at the level that they are now. So I think Tethered was benefited by really two things. A, we made the products a whole lot better, lighter, faster, easier to use, more comfortable, et cetera. It was a better product now. And then B, social media came around and it was easy to educate the customer, or the hunter rather. Because before, the only way to find out about it was to happen upon it in a store that sold it or meet some random guy like a John Eberhardt who was using it. And there was like 12 people in the whole country that were using it. So you just had no real way to be introduced to it. But then social media and YouTube comes along and now we can tell the whole world about it for, you know, basically free. And it just kind of it kind of grew legs.
Yeah. Yeah. And that has me thinking about what other fads back really in anything, you know, like fads go away, but then with the birth of social media 20, 30 years ago, you know, they had a fad, but if you add social media really to any recipe, it has the potential of blowing up and being something permanent.
Absolutely. Especially if it's a well-designed idea,
exactly.
Right? It's like if you have the right product, but it's the wrong time, or you don't know how to tell people about it, it's going to fail. But if you have the right product and you know how to tell people about it, the sky's the limit. And it doesn't matter if it's hunting or cars or home repairs. We at Tethered, we kind of got lucky in that we had the right product, but then we had the right product at the right time and the right people on the team. So, you know, we were really, really lucky that all of those things came together at once, and certainly don't take that for granted. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So let me ask you this. You guys came out, and as far as the rebirth of the saddle, there were a couple that were already in business, right? You might be number two or number three that came and said, hey, we have this offering too. And then for a while there, it was just a couple of you, right? But as we continue and people see that this is no longer a fad, I mean, if companies thought it was a fad, they wouldn't be introducing saddles into their lineup. But we're starting to see all these additional companies bring saddles into their product lineup and, you know, give an offering for there. How do you guys deal with that? Because from someone like me, I'm a tree stand hunter. You know, I put that label on myself. I see a saddle is a saddle is a saddle, right? I mean, it's not a tree stand, so a saddle is a saddle. How do you guys stay ahead of that and say, okay, we know that the market is going to be bringing not necessarily ripoffs, but other saddles to the market under different brand names. How do we compete with that?
Well, I think you have to focus on innovation, right? I mean, any market, any product, you know, hunting industry isn't special. At the end of the day, it's innovation drives profit or, you know, success, whatever you want to call it. If you're constantly innovating and pushing the boundaries, I think you can win. And that's why I think you're seeing this explosion in the lightweight tree stand market, like we talked about.
Yeah.
Because now tree stands are having to compete with saddles. It's like, man, I could do this for 10 pounds all in with a saddle setup, but you know, your typical tree stand is way over 10 pounds just by itself. And hunters were seeing the benefits, and so tree stand companies had to adapt, and we're seeing that. So in the end, it's good for everyone when competition comes into the marketplace. So that's kind of how I try to look at it, is that, yeah, it kind of sucks when some companies steal your ideas, and yeah, it kind of sucks when there's more competition, but at the end of the day, hunters win. And so we try to keep that at the, you know, the front of our minds, and we just try to keep innovating and keep pushing and try not to worry too much about what other people are doing and make gear selfishly. That's really how all of our products come along, is, well, there's a group of us sitting around and we're like, man, you know what sucked? The other day I was climbing this tree and X happened. How do we solve for X?
Yeah.
And then we solve X, and it's like, you know what? I bet other people would like X to be solved. And that's how it works. So we just kind of, I think you just have to focus on making the best gear possible, and the rest will kind of take care of itself.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense, man. All right. So is one of your new products this year a platform?
Yeah, we've got a carbon fiber platform that's going through testing right now, and it should be available in the summertime.
All right. So the Predator platform was something you already had, but the carbon fiber version of that is going to be available within the next 6 months.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right. So let me ask you this. I don't know if you can answer this question or not. Is that platform produced by a company that also makes tree stands, or is this your own baby?
No, it's not produced by a tree stand company.
Okay, so it's your guys' own deal.
Yep.
with that, a platform is really just a very small, compact version of a tree stand, okay? With what we've just talked about, other companies bringing in saddles, do you guys ever see yourself expanding and bringing in tree stands to your product lineup?
We've talked about it quite a bit, actually, because sometimes I get, because of my line of work, I get pigeonholed into being like, I would only ever hunt from a saddle. Like, that's just not reality. I always preach a golfer carries more than one club. You should use whatever the right tool is for the job. If it's an elevated box blind on a cornfield and that's what you need to kill the buck, then use that, right? So we've talked about doing tree stands, but it would have to be something that was so much different slash better than anything else out there for us to kind of get into that game. And honestly, tree stands are pretty awesome right now with what some of these other companies are doing and lightening the load and making them more user-friendly. And they're going in the right direction as far as I'm concerned. So I would hesitate to jump into the tree stand market unless we could really set ourselves apart. And I don't know if we could do that right now.
Yeah. Man, I tell you what, and then the thing about innovation, right? I love this, but also hate this as well. Because a company could come out with a really good idea, but it would compete with another patent that's already out there, right? Well, patents help protect companies as much as they hinder innovation sometimes. You know what I mean? So do you guys have, like, as far as any of the products that you're dealing with, like, how often do you have to work around another patent because someone else, as far as slowing you down from innovation, but at the same time, a tethered saddle, it has a patent behind it, which protects you guys for a while?
Frequently. Yeah. More in the climbing stick and the platform, like the small tree stand version.
Yeah.
Then with saddles, since we weren't the first by any stretch, but in this new wave of saddle hunting companies, we were the first. And because of that, we kind of have the IP around a lot of our stuff as far as saddles go. But yeah, absolutely. Like when we were designing our climbing sticks and the platforms, we had to deal with that. And, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. But it ended up being a good thing for us because we had to, you know, you encounter this problem, right? You're like, okay, let's just say attachment method, right? I'm gonna attach my climbing stick to the tree this way. Oh, wait, you know, Lone Wolf has a patent on that. So how do we solve that? Well, let's put our thinking caps on and figure out a better way to do it. And that sometimes ends up being a blessing in disguise that you ran into the patent. That has happened to us on two separate occasions. So it's not always bad dealing with the patents. And then if you are the patent holder, it's obviously a good thing that your hard work can be protected.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I feel like you guys have a bit of an advantage and not just necessarily in the, and this is good for you, I think, but you guys created an army, right? You came out, your brand, your social, the way you guys have created and built your business, you guys have created an army. How much does that help you when it comes to product testing or, you know, going from version 1.0 to 2.0?
A ton. And that was an advantage that was born out of necessity. 'Cause when we launched, we didn't have any money.
Yeah.
So we couldn't afford to advertise or anything like that. So the only thing we could do in the beginning was basically build an army of people, help them solve their problems of gear, and then ask them. Like, and when we started shipping our gear originally, I paid to have a card made, an insert into the packaging that said, hey, please share this with someone on social media, because if you don't, we're not going to make it. And it kind of worked. It's a big advantage, and we have a group of guys like Garrett, you know, one of your guys, DIY Sportsman, another one of your guys, Parker, Andy May, you've had him on your podcast a bunch. We have guys like that are testing and helping us build gear, and you can't really overstate how important that is when when you have real hunters that are living and breathing this stuff, you know, 365 days a year, providing input onto what you could do better differently, it makes a big, big difference.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I would put per capita, let's just say per capita, but I would put the tethered nation or the people who are using tethered products and going out and loving it. There's a loyalty there that I see in, you know, that other brands that have been around for a very long time have. Right. And you guys have created this in a very short period of time. So kudos to you guys, man. That's hard to do.
Thank you. We worked really hard at it. And then also we're lucky, right? Yeah. You can't, I'm not trying to just talk like we knew exactly what we were doing. I mean, we worked really hard and we were smart, but you have to have a lot of luck too. And we were definitely the beneficiaries of some luck. And, yeah, it's been kind of a crazy ride, and I think some of that enthusiasm for our brand, you mentioned it a minute ago because you said, you know, the gear's working for them as anticipated, right? So I think a big part of it is this hunter, he's probably a little, he's maybe, he's standoffish from switching from tree stands to saddle hunting, and then he gets it, and he tries it a few times, and he works the kinks out, and he goes, man, this is actually really cool. And because of the utility of it for him or her, they turn into our biggest salesman. And that's really been a blessing for us.
Yeah, absolutely, man. All right. So let's talk about what's new. All right. You guys, you've been on the podcast before. We've talked about this. People can go to the website, tetherednation.com and check out all of the products that you guys have. But let's talk about what's new, what you guys have brought to the market in 2022 or in the last 6 months or whatever.
So 2022 or in the last 6 months, I guess we'll go with that. We released our Skeletor climbing stick, which is, before that we had released the one climbing stick, and that was a 1 pound titanium climbing stick. And it's stupid expensive, but it's also stupid light. I mean, it's when you pick these things up, we've kind of gone around the country and showed them to people, and it's the same reaction every time. As soon as they pick up a 3-pack, their jaw just hits the ground because they can't believe how light it is. It's pretty cool. And then we followed that up. I guess the downside of the titanium super light climbing stick was that it was really, really expensive. And so we followed that up with what we consider like our budget-friendly climbing stick. So that's called the Skeletor, and it's got a lot of cool features. So we released that in maybe September of 2021, so right at 6 months ago or so. We released that. That's been doing really, really well. People are loving it. And then we released the carbon fiber platform at the ATA this year, and that one will be ready for sale this summer. There's probably a couple more things that'll get released this summer. Nothing super crazy or anything that's going to change anybody's life, but just some cool accessories, I suppose, that'll make you a little bit more efficient. But yeah, I would say the climbing stick and the carbon fiber platform are the newest things that we have out.
All right, let's talk specs. On this carbon fiber platform, what are we talking about? Weight, size, dimension, whatever.
So that's actually pretty cool. It's going to be – we have two platforms currently, two cast, die-cast aluminum platforms. And we call the small one the Predator and the big one the XL. And the XL is, I think, right a little over 4 pounds, and then the small one is 3 pounds. So the carbon fiber platform – is going to give you the size of our XL Predator, but the weight of the standard small Predator. So it'll come in at right around 3 pounds. We're tweaking the formula right now and still doing the final testing. So I don't have a specific weight just yet, but it should be right around 3 pounds. And then the size of our XL Predator, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. And then as far as the sticks are concerned, let's go to those carbon fiber sticks once. What's a pack of four, or what do you sell them in, a pack of four or three?
So the Skeletors, yeah, the Skeletors, they come in a four-pack, and they're right around $200, maybe a touch more, but right around $200.
Okay, and then what's the four-pack weight on those? Do you happen to know
those
that?
Are 2 pounds a stick, yeah, so that's including the attachment method, so you're at 8 pounds for a four-pack. Okay. I mean, you may be like 8 pounds in an ounce or something, but it's basically 8 pounds.
Right, and then what about the other sticks?
So the one sticks are 1 pound per stick. So okay. To compare apples per apples, your 4 1 sticks weigh 4 pounds, and 4 Skeletors weigh 8 pounds. So you're at 50% reduction in weight. So you're essentially just paying for your weight reduction if you want to move into the one sticks, and that's about $350 for a 3-pack. A bit more expensive.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, just like there's a market for ladder stands that don't move and are not mobile, there's a market for the complete opposite side of the spectrum that are ultralight, carbon fiber, everything. And I mean, there's both options there, right?
Absolutely. And that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to give an option for that guy that's crazy, like us, you know, that are just think about this all the time. And then give an option for the normal guy that doesn't need to spend $400 on a set of climbing sticks.
Yeah, exactly. Let me ask you this. Obviously, price plays a role in any decision making that one of your customers goes through. They have to, you know, they do their own budget. What are you guys selling more of? Or what do you guys plan to sell more of, the one or the Skeletor?
Definitely the Skeletor.
Yeah.
Definitely. It's probably... I mean, they're all new. So the one sticks came out last year, and we immediately sold out of them. And we're expecting to be having them back in the store here. It's late February now. Probably in about 6 weeks, they'll be back in stock. Gotcha. But the price point is so different. It's essentially double that we think the Skeletors are probably going to be the bigger seller.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, I look at this, and please don't take this as a jab, okay? Because I'm just comparing what everybody else is going to compare. I look at the Skeletors, and it kind of reminds me of, I think it's a Hawk climbing stick that has come out. It just looks very similar. The functionality may be different, whatever. Just from the one view, it looks different. And those, I've got more people talk negative about those sticks than actually liked them in the product review. You know, that's a small sample size compared to everybody who bought them. So I look at this, what makes this Skeletor durable? What makes it, you know, like people not going to have an issue with it?
So the Skeletor is actually not all that similar to, well, it is a little similar to the Hawk, but what you really have to do is you have to go back in time and look at what Hawk essentially copied, and that was the leverage climbing stick. That they went out of business about 10 years ago, I think, but our product, the Skeletors, is much more of a copy of the leverage climbing stick than the Hawk climbing stick.
Right.
And they went out of business a while ago, like I said. So the big difference in the Hawk, what's current, and then the leverage, which we modeled our stick after, is the leverage stick folded away from the tree. So the post or the tube is straight on the Hawk stick. The sticks fold straight, you know, straight out away from the post. But the post on our sticks and the leverage, the steps fold at a 45-degree angle back away from the tree.
Okay, yeah, so, I see that now.
So it's a little bit different. While the Hawks are flat, ours is angled. And is it a huge deal? Like, no, but it does make it a little bit easier to climb. You have a little bit more room for your feet. So when it's late in the season and you got big, heavy boots on and your layers are bulking up, it makes it a little bit easier to climb. And then the other thing that our stick does that is light years ahead of the Hawk's sticks, in my opinion, is our attachment method. We call it the Dynalock button, and it's essentially a boat cleat. That's where we got the idea from. So you wrap your rope around the tree and then lock it off like a cleat. And it's so fast, it's so easy, and it's so secure. I really think that is a huge selling point for the Skeletors as opposed to the Hawks. And they're really similar in price. I think the Hawks are a little bit cheaper than ours, but they're really close. And so, yeah, to get back to your original question, they are very, very similar. But like I said, we kind of modeled ours after a product that came before the Hawks as opposed to the other way around.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I've just been educated, so I'm glad you did that. But don't underplay what you just said about having boot space between the step and the tree, because, dude, that's important. Like, I don't know how many times, you know, it doesn't happen all the time. But when I used to wear rubber boots, I don't wear big rubber boots anymore just because I found another way of staying warm. But when you are wearing a big giant boot and you're on a bigger diameter tree, you have to turn your foot sideways in some cases. And that's not necessarily as safe as something like this that, you know, creates space between the tree and the step.
Absolutely. That's the single biggest piece of feedback we get about the sticks. It's one and two. The two things that I just mentioned are the two biggest pieces of feedback. Number one is the angle away for more room for your boot. And like you said, yeah, it doesn't seem like a big deal until you do have big boots on and it's 20 degrees outside and you're freezing. And then all of a sudden it makes a big difference.
Yeah.
And then two, that attachment method. People love the attachment method too. So it's pretty cool. And like I said, we just released those this past fall. So this will be our first year, full year with them in stock, and I'm excited to see what they do.
Yeah, that's a fact. So I can't help but think about this, because last night I ordered a sleeping bag online, and I'm getting really close to ordering an ultralight tent for backcountry hunting when I go out west, right? So for me, kind of weight, like I don't typically bitch about weight, but when you're going into some of these places with water, you know, I have to carry my water in too, because I don't know if, you know, there's going to be any out there depending on where I go. I'm trying to find ways to reduce, not necessarily reduce the total weight, but be able to carry more water in, essentially. So I've been looking at lighter sleeping bags, lighter tents, you know, lighter gear, and finding way to minimalize a little bit. With the backpacking and the other side of the outdoor market that's not into hunting, they offer some crazy material that is way lighter, but potentially way more expensive. Are you guys brainstorming or looking at any type of this aerospace next level high value? Like, it would be a big investment for somebody, but it has the potential to make what you guys have that much lighter and be able to, like, we're talking ounces instead of pounds.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of our inspiration, when I started making saddles in my basement on my $100 Singer sewing machine way back in the, like, 2009, 2010, that's exactly where all the inspiration came from. Yeah. I was in the Army and I was stationed in Fort Carson, Colorado, and I got into lightweight, ultralight backpacking. And yeah, it was stupid. Like, so you see what the prices are now that you're kind of jumping off the cliff into lightweight tents and sleeping bags. It's crazy what it can sometimes cost to save half a pound. It's like, what? You know, it'll be a $200 sleeping bag and it weighs 2 pounds, right? But if you want to go to a pound and a half, it might jump up to $500 for that sleeping bag. It's nuts. And you're probably seeing that as you jump into tents and sleeping bags. But that's exactly where all the inspiration came from. It was looking at lightweight stuff that the hikers were doing and how can I port that over into hunting, because – at the time, I was climbing the mountains too in Colorado, and I didn't want to carry big, heavy tree stands anymore. It just wasn't practical.
Right.
So we absolutely have that as part of our ethos, and that will never change.
Yeah. Are there plateaus? You know, like we've talked about the tree stand market, like the hang on tree stand. At some point, I mean, yeah, you can break through with different material, but as far as form and function are concerned, there's plateaus, and until somebody finds a way to maybe stack sticks flatter or have a tree stand that is extremely lighter for a much, you know, carbon fiber, obviously. Moore's Law, what's that? Moore's Law, when technology, every 18 months, technology becomes cheaper to produce or something like that, whatever that rule is. In the saddle game, like, are you guys dealing with plateaus yet? And if so, how are you trying to break through them?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, it happens to every industry. I mean, you can only push things so far until there is a breakthrough, either in materials or construction methods or something that typically doesn't have to do with the hunting industry, right? Like, some mountain climber will figure out a way to do some kind of crazy thing with ultralight gear or some kind of new construction method, and then hunters are, you know, will grab it and bring it over. So I think you're right. I think everything seems to have plateaued a little bit, and until there's some kind of major breakthrough in materials or construction methods, we're probably not going to see any kind of big quantum leaps like we saw in the last 5 years. I mean, from my perspective, the last 5 years has been the golden age for mobile hunters, right? Yeah. There's been more options now than there has been in history, and that's pretty cool. And that probably won't happen again until it happens again.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I always like to ask this question because I'm that stubborn SOB who's kind of stuck in his ways. I've become very efficient with the tree stands that I've used over the years. It's Novex now, but it used to be the Lone Wolf and Four Sticks. And I'm set in my ways. I'm very comfortable with it. Now, to the guys out there like me who are just like, man, I can't get past the whole saddle thing. What do you tell them, or how do you pitch to them? Hey man, just try a saddle.
Well, you know, that might not be the best option. Like you said, if you're comfortable with where you are and you don't get uncomfortable in a tree stand and you never find trees that you can't put it in, and you know what I mean? If it works for you, then hey, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. What I would say is to the guy that is maybe uncomfortable or maybe looking for a little bit more performance or whatever the case may be, then you should try it. And now it's cool because there's so many people that have it. You probably have a buddy that has it now,
right?
Either a tethered brand or some other brand or whatever, and you can try it. Before Tethered launched, you didn't even have that option. Your only option was a tree stand.
Yeah.
And so it's cool that we're kind of past that point and that you can try it. But at the end of the day, it's a very comfortable alternative, very lightweight, very efficient alternative to a tree stand. But if a tree stand works for you, and especially with the way they are now, with they're making them so much better and lighter, that maybe you shouldn't try it. You know, it's not very good for me from a business perspective, but at the same time, we're really all about just making hunters more efficient. And I don't really see a way that an experienced saddle hunter isn't more efficient than an experienced tree stand guy. I'll always believe that the saddle guy wins, but you know, that doesn't mean I'm right. That's just my perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, we've kind of talked about the evolution of Tethered. You know, we've talked about the new products, the market as a whole. What do you think's coming in the next, from a mobile hunting standpoint, what do you think is going to be the next buzzword or the next hot topic now that saddle hunting is here and here to stay?
Man, if only I had that crystal ball, I would be a very, very wealthy man because I could capitalize on it. That's tough to say. I do think, I'm calling this right now, that you are going to see in the next 12 months an absolute boom in saddle hunting. And it's only going to get bigger, and it's only going to get more and more plugged into the mainstream guys. And when I mean mainstream, I mean that hunter that we talked about earlier that's hunting the back 40 or only gets to hunt, you know, a handful of days a year just because they're not crazy hardcore like a lot of your listeners probably are. But you're going to see much more adoption into the mainstream in the next 12 months.
Okay. All right. That's awesome, right? Good for you guys. And then obviously that builds your market and that allows you to innovate and bring new products to the table. And I forgot to ask you this question right off the bat. And I think I already know the answer because of the nature of what you're doing. When it comes to, let's take saddles and tethered and climbing sticks out of the equation. And let's talk about every other product out on the market. Are you a guy who likes to tinker with your gear, or are you a guy that once you find something, you stick with it?
So I used to be the mega tinkerer, like mega tinkerer. I mean, I couldn't use a single piece of gear. If it was a climbing stick, tree stand, a backpack, whatever, a weapon. I was always tinkering with it. And I've kind of gotten away from that a little bit because I find myself in the position that you are now with your tree stand, your Novix tree stand, and your sticks, where you are just so comfortable, you can set it up in the dark, blindfolded, and your routine is just nailed. I'm there finally with my gear, and so I don't find myself tinkering as much as I used to. But there's a part of me that is just a tinkerer at heart, and now I find myself doing that more with like kayaks and fishing equipment than I do with my hunting gear, because I feel like it's so dialed that I just don't want to change it anymore.
Yeah, that's a great point. Well, Greg, man, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to talk about your company and just BS with me for a little bit. Great conversation. And if people want to find out more about Tethered, where do we send them?
You can find us on any social media on the web, Tethered Nation. That's how you can find us. I would encourage you to check out, if you're interested in saddle hunting, I would get on YouTube. That's definitely your best resource. And there are so many options out there for educators now, people that are using different brands and different styles and different climbing methods, and educate yourself and try to figure what might work for you, because there's no longer any recipe for success. Like, Dan's recipe works for him, and yeah, my recipe works for me. And now there's so many options out there, and you can be educated, and you don't have to go it alone. So that's really, really a really cool place that we find ourselves as hunters, with all of these options and all of these ways to learn about making ourselves better.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, again, I appreciate your time.
Yeah, man. Thanks, Dan.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.